Welcome to Aspire, Arch Street Public Radio, broadcasting interviews from our international Innovate podcast series, giving voice to socially conscious and forward-thinking leaders and organizations within the nonprofit, education, culture, philanthropy, and social entrepreneurship sectors. Here's your host, Robert Rim.
Our guest today is Frank Beadle DiPalomo, President and CEO of Mothers to Mothers. Started in Cape Town, South Africa in 2001, its initial focus was on preventing mother-to-child transmission of HIV, but it's built on that original mission by empowering women in Africa to serve as lay healthcare workers to help other women access essential services and medical care. In 2017, MTM reached nearly 800,000 new clients directly and 2.3 million new clients through organizations implementing MTM's model. Frank joined Mothers to Mothers in 2012, bringing with him more than 26 years of experience in the global health community, including significant achievements in HIV prevention, care, and treatment, as well as U.S. and global infectious and communicable disease prevention, treatment, research, and advocacy. Frank, welcome to Innovate.
Thank you so much. I'm very excited to be here today.
Much of your career has been dedicated to improving the health of the global community. What were the origins of your interest in such crucial work?
I think the origins came from my childhood and background. My parents are Mexican-American. I am Mexican-American. And they immigrated. My father immigrated to the United States when he was quite young. My mother was born in the United States. And we grew up understanding, because of the mix of work that they had done and family members had done, the migrant farm worker kind of way of life. And I understood from a very early age the importance of medical care and health services and how inaccessible they were, how difficult they were to find, the cost of them. Being on the younger side of a very large extended family, I often was in the bilingual space of both translating and understanding things in the dominant American culture and helping to understand to the family what was happening. And I understood at that time that I wanted to do something more and that health was something that called me. So I originally was focused on wanting to become a doctor, and I soon was disavowed of that, not so much from the topic area, but just from the focus of working with one person at a time. I was taciturn. I wanted to do more. And very luckily, when I was in college, I had an advisor who introduced me as part of my work study program. I was able to become a rehabilitation tech in substance abuse at the Veterans Administration Hospital in Menlo Park in California. And that began this immediate engagement with injection drug use, with HIV, understanding hepatitis, being pulled into things that were very hands-on, and it began this drive in me to want to do, to know more, and to change the realities of what I was seeing.
It's fascinating, isn't it, too, Frank, how our experiences in youth and as we grow up can directly impact our mission in life.
It is. And I think that there's so many things when I step back. And of course, when you're young and you're living through these things, you think that the experiences are the worst, that no one else is having them. Why me? And as I look back at those early years and just through my whole life and my career, I feel very fortunate that I feel like I was always in the right places and spaces to be developing both the knowledge, the tools, and the motivation to do what I do. And I feel that there's a good karma, all of these things are connected, and it's something that for me, that early connection of health and social justice was something that just came together. It was lit on fire, and it's continued to burn quite steadily in me through these years.
And you talk about the knowledge, tools, and motivation, which have directly helped you with your work with Mothers to Mothers. It was founded to prevent the transmission of HIV from mothers to their children. How did Africa become the epicenter of the fight to eradicate AIDS?
You know, I think a couple of key things. One was, sadly, ignorance, in that world leaders, government leaders, the world, basically ignored Africa. Our focus on HIV initially, as it needed to be, was our ground zero in the United States and in parts of Europe. And when you have an epidemic that was raging in the way it was in New York, in San Francisco, in key urban centers, in Berlin, in London, in key urban centers in Europe, the attention of the developed world was really focused on those spaces. And sadly, very quietly, through many of the kind of activities that we already knew to change in the Western part of the world, whether it was safe blood supplies, whether it was testing for HIV serostatus, whether it was having folks access care early on, whether it was palliative or other kinds of health services, that wasn't happening in Africa. And so the epidemic, in addition to its own kind of viral progression, there are also some social norms that were occurring on the continent that basically made the situation ripe for an epidemic to burn out of control.
And what's it like to access medication in Africa? You talked about the developed countries. So in Africa, what's it like, both in availability and cost?
You know, by and large, it is much easier and actually not much different than what we would see in the United States these days in many parts of Africa. Now, Africa is made up of 54 countries, and so each has a very different reality. I'll speak specifically from here in South Africa. South Africa has the largest population of individuals living with HIV. It also has the largest number of people on treatment, on antiretrovirals. The government provides the majority of those drugs. They're provided for free for individuals that are HIV infected. Individuals access clinics, medical services. There is quite a strong public health infrastructure here. It doesn't mean that we have enough doctors or nurses or lay health workers for every person that comes in, but it does mean that within hours or within many, many hours, an individual will be seen, they'll be attended to, and they will have access. We don't have stockouts. There's access to refills, and the drugs are very similar to the drugs that we would see in the United States or in Western Europe, except that because of, on large part, the initial work of the United States, a global patent pool was created that basically put the intellectual property, the patents of these incredible antiretrovirals into the public domain. And in Africa, generic pharmaceuticals are able to make these drugs. And so instead of drugs that would cost in the thousands and even upper hundreds of dollars, they're costing in the dollars and cents. And so the government, while it's never easy to afford to be able to cover 4.5 to 5 million people on antiretrovirals, it is something that the government is committed to, and they've done an amazing job to be able to both find individuals who are HIV infected and to make sure that they are counseled, initiated onto antiretrovirals, and that they have access to their follow-up drugs so that they can be virally suppressed, adhere to their drugs, and stop transmission.
That's great to hear about the involvement of the government, which certainly shouldn't be taken for granted, should it? Especially these days.
No, and I remember when I first started my work here in South Africa, which was my first foray into Africa, there was a much more hostile environment. Unfortunately, the government post Nelson Mandela had some very interesting ideas and policies, for example, that HIV did not cause AIDS. And there was an entire commission that tried to prove or disprove that issue. And while that was going on, there was disinformation, there was a lack of attention, and you basically had provincial governments. South Africa is made up of 9 provinces. You had provincial governments that would, some of them would take the role of the federal approach, and some of them, like the Western Cape, where Cape Town is located, became more maverick and decided that they were going to go it alone and push for treatment and push for seronology. And it is a wonderful thing to be able to say this day that the government, the Department of Health at the very highest level, the Minister of Health, is committed, is a partner, and is making sure that his people have the best services that they can get.
And talking about disinformation, the AIDS outbreak in the U.S. and the developed world was the source of widespread stigma. along with such misunderstanding of the virus and its transmission. How have you worked to change this, and is it still a challenge?
You know, stigma is still a challenge, and stigma here in Africa, and especially in the early days, and when I say the early days, I mean the beginning of the 2000s, the situation was much more widespread, whereas in the West, the epidemic was largely among key populations, so among gay men, among injection drug users. It wasn't as widespread or deeply ingrained in the community as we saw the epidemic become here in Africa, where it is a virus that's transmitted actually more so heterosexually than through homosexual activity. And so you had a very widespread impact, and especially women were largely impacted here. And because in those days, testing was really not happening as much as it should, there were no access to the antiretrovirals, the AIDS diagnosis and HIV serostatus diagnosis was basically a death sentence. And so there was widespread stigma and people being kicked out of their homes, people not wanting to eat with each other, really distancing themselves from each other. Palliative care centers and hospices became a place of refuge for literally hundreds of thousands. And one of the ways that we have really combated this at Mothers to Mothers is the fact that the individual that is engaging with HIV positive clients, and our focus is on HIV positive pregnant women and other high risk pregnant women, as well as their children and their partners. The key individual is a lay health worker, and we call them mentor mothers. They are HIV positive women who have successfully gone through the treatment of what we call the prevention of mother-to-child treatment, that they have taken their antiretrovirals, they have become virally suppressed, and they did not transmit the virus to their child, so they have an HIV-free child. They are working hand-in-hand with doctors and nurses. They see a client when a client is first diagnosed in a clinic, and these mentor mothers partner with a client from that time of diagnosis until the time that the baby is about 18 months old. And through that, they go through a journey of education, of ensuring access to clinics, navigating services and referrals, supporting adherence, really making sure that the best possible health for that mother, that HIV positive mother or that very high risk mother, is supported to make sure that we have the best possible outcomes for her as well as for her baby. And by doing that, you see this incredible transformation. And I've been doing this work for 30-ish years. And every time I'm in a clinic, every time I'm with a mentor mother, I am humbled by the power that she exudes, the energy that she shares, and her ability to be able to guide this client through behavior change and through making decisions that will transform her life. I had a mentor mother that told me one time, she said it so clearly, I asked her, what is it that, you know, what's the secret sauce? How is it that you're able to make this happen? And she looked at me and she said, what I do, Frank, is as that client, as that woman is going through the worst moment of her life, she's come in excited that she thinks or knows she's pregnant. She wants to get the verification and find out how far along she is. She then finds out she's HIV positive. And also remember that in sub-Saharan Africa, we have positivity rates that are in the 30-ish percents for women of reproductive health age. So it's a large number of women that are already infected. She finds out that she's positive. She thinks, I'm not going to live. My baby's not going to live. She's crying. She's retreating within herself. And this mentor mother said, I put my hands on her shoulders and I look at her eye to eye and I say, right now, you're going to feel like this. And as she looks up at me, I then put my hands on her hands. I transfer them to my shoulders and I say, but tomorrow, you're going to feel like this. She's able to transfer the fact that she's an HIV positive woman. She is working. She's employed. She's a role model. She is doing something to help improve the lives of others. And we hear from all of our current mentor mothers, when I ask them the question, why is it you decided to become a mentor mother? They all say, because my mentor mother was beautiful. She was happy. She was amazing. And she changed my life, and I want to change others. So that's how we get at not just the secret sauce of our program, but through this one-on-one and this community mobilization of changing stigma. We show that someone can be HIV positive, they can be healthy, they can have a really productive, amazing life, they can make sure their babies are not infected, and if they have a partner that is not HIV positive already, they can protect that partner. And so that's a lot of incredible positives that transforms the impact of this disease.
It's great to recognize how the role of women in the affected areas of Africa has become such a vital one, really at the heart of your Mothers to Mothers model. And Mentor Mothers has made the M2M model really so effective, hasn't it?
It has. I mean, I don't know of any other way that we could have been so effective. We consider women in general, mothers, as one of the most untapped and one of the most resilient resources in any community. The women, we identify them in, they have to apply for the jobs. When we select them, we work on both professionalizing them and educate them. And then very importantly, we pay them. So for example, right now, we have probably one of the largest workforces of any non-governmental organization with a little over 3,000 HIV positive women working in a little over 1,000 sites and providing services. You mentioned those numbers in the introduction. You know, for an organization that has reached 2.3 million new clients in 2017, both ourselves and with our partners combined, that's an incredible scale that our mentor mothers are delivering every single day.
And now, a word from Arch Street Press. Created by a diverse group of chefs, nutritionists, and food activists, Mindful Eating for the Beloved Community offers strategies to rebuild the connections between diet, culture, faith, the environment, and community well-being, with a focus on the deep connection between mindful eating, social justice, and sustainability. Through powerful storytelling and thoughtful analysis, the essays in Mindful Eating for the Beloved Community explore the historical and cultural shifts that have affected the way we eat. These essays provide the starting points for conversations to help us reframe our relationship with food to allow for physical, emotional, and spiritual healing. With one seed empowered, many trees take root. We now return to Frank and Robert.
You mentioned how Mothers to Mothers is a non-governmental organization. So it's an African-based global NGO. So as an NGO, what's the scope of your work and what are the advantages of being recognized as an NGO?
Sure. We are very proud that we are African and that we are Africa-based. So our head office is here in Cape Town, which is a gorgeous, lovely place. And from here, we direct services in 8 other sub-Saharan African countries. So in the east, we work in Kenya, we work in Uganda, we work in Malawi, we work in Mozambique, in Zambia, in Lesotho, in Eswatini, which was formerly known as Swaziland. We work in South Africa, and we're very excited that this year we're also going to be opening up services in Ghana in the west and also in Angola. And through this approach, as an organization that is known to be an African innovative entrepreneurial organization, we are able to open doors to providing services that other organizations cannot. One of the big benefits is that we are here, we are mission-driven, we're not just parachuting in and leaving. Our workforce are indigenous, they are local. So a mentor mother in Uganda, a mentor mother in Malawi, while they have very similar training, while they are using almost the exact same tools, they are providing those services and in the local vernacular. They're providing services, understanding those local customs. They live in the communities that they're serving. And so we're not taking someone from Cape Town and putting them in Jinja. We're not taking someone from Lilongwe and putting them in Maseru. We are making sure that this is local. And in doing that, and by being African-based, we're able to also demonstrate the sustainability. We're very excited that, for example, in Kenya, we partnered with the U.S. Agency for International Development and the Kenya Ministry of Health to create the Kenya Mentor Mother Program, which transitioned, you know, several hundred sites that were run by Mothers to Mothers to other local implementers for a program in which women attending maternal child health services are now seen by a local mentor mother across the country. We've done the same thing here in South Africa. Four out of our nine provinces have been part of a South Africa mentor mother program. The national government we worked with to create a national policy, and these four provinces have actually transitioned not just the program into their clinics, but they've also taken on our mentor mothers who are now in these four provinces government employees. And so we're able to show that we have a localness, a sustainability, and because we're here, we're not giving up on this issue until it's done.
And about opening doors and sustainability, what was the translation like for Mothers to Mothers to move beyond its initial focus of preventing mother-to-child transmission of HIV to providing services related to early childhood development and also adolescent health?
Because English is not really my first language, I tend to mess up these little either adages or colloquialisms, but I tend to use one that I've heard from when I was very young. Evidently, someone asked Billy the Kid, why did he rob banks? And his answer was, that's where the money is. We as Mothers to Mothers, because our focus has been to eliminate pediatric AIDS, we have been following the virus, and the virus continues in communities because luckily the drugs are so good, it means that people living with the disease are able to live long, productive lives. But it means that there is a reservoir, there is a pool of infection. And so we follow it. We moved into early childhood development because, as I mentioned earlier, we work with an HIV-positive woman during pregnancy until the time that that baby is about 18 months old. That's a long time, from about 3 months to 18 months of that child's life. It's a very long time of a relationship that we've built with this individual. In building that relationship, we know our clients really, really well. We understand, for example, that a client might, this might be her second child, she's so thrilled that her baby was born HIV-free, she now wants to focus on potentially herself finishing education or going to get a formal job or to begin to do something drastically different in her household or in her community. And in doing so, HIV goes from being the top issue that she's focused on 100% to maybe being number 5, maybe number 6, maybe number 10 in terms of priority. And in that drop, there's a potential that she might stop getting her refills on time. She might be so busy that she might not remember to take her medication on time. In that happening, potentially her viral load could increase. If she's still breastfeeding the child, and we do encourage HIV-positive women to breastfeed their child exclusively or to formula feed exclusively, not to mix, but if she stops taking her medication, her viral load could go up. If somehow that baby has had mixed feeding or her viral load is too high, there's now a risk that that child who was born HIV-free could now actually acquire the virus. So we decided that one of the big things we wanted to do was to get into the homes. We already work in facilities. We already work in communities. This was an opportunity with early childhood development to actually be in the homes. While we're in the homes, we are focusing on the development of that HIV-exposed child. And there are some really good data, some science that shows that HIV-exposed children often have a bit of a lag in terms of the developmental growth. And And so they need extra stimulation, really intense stimulation. And it's something that we help the caregivers understand, whether it's the mother or it's an auntie or it's a granny. We help them understand and we train them on how to focus on the stimulation. We also make sure that that child has good nutrition, that they are having all their immunizations. We help the mother with pre-literacy and a lot of cognitive skills. And we also look at those big developmental milestones like crawling and other kinds of issues. And for me, while that's incredible, because, for example, in 2017, we were able to demonstrate that 97% of the children in our early childhood development programs were achieving 97% of their first year developmental goals. And that's compared to some countries where that percentage was as low as 60%. Well, that's incredible, and I'm ecstatic that we've been able to be effective and show that we can do this. For me, the Trojan horse is that mentor mother who's in the home can make sure that that mom is getting some extra attention. And so she can talk to her about her refills, about how she's feeling on the medication, making sure she's staying adherent for her own health. And because of that, we keep our eye on where that baby's going, where that child is going to grow and develop and thrive. But we also make sure we keep an eye on that mom because she is so critical. If she's not healthy, that baby's not going to be healthy.
And in thinking about mothers to mothers, it's asserted that it's possible to eliminate AIDS. So tell us what it looks like in practice. And do you actually have a time frame in mind?
Well, the whole world had a time frame in mind. We thought that we would have this pretty much eradicated or eliminated, I should say, which is a virtual elimination is bringing the transmission below 5%. And that would mean that you basically have kind of broken the back of the epidemic. And in reality, we are still seeing, unfortunately, transmission occurring. And in 2017, for example, there were 180,000 children that became infected with HIV, and the UN target was zero that year. We are still seeing a situation in which, you know, we're talking about children being infected both through pregnancy, through birth, and through breastfeeding, and we need to be able to change that. So, as I mentioned, we work in 8 countries. We work in extremely HIV high prevalence countries, as well as we look at incidence, so the number of new infections that occur, and that's where we tend to focus our resources. We are also now looking very aggressively at a couple of other key countries that if we can muster the resources, we can go into and take our program, basically take the fight to the virus and affect the tail of this epidemic. I would imagine that this is still something, well, I think many folks are still talking about 2020. Let's be honest, I think it's more about 2025, in which we potentially could bring this epidemic as a true footnote in history. And while I say that in terms of eliminating pediatric AIDS, which again is core to our mission and something that we basically say we were born in 2001 to eliminate pediatric AIDS as mothers to mothers, we also have to keep our eye on the fact that when you look at the epidemic and where it's going, we're doing an incredible job, both as mothers to mothers, as UNICEF, as many other NGOs and governments across the globe, to have babies that are born HIV-free. But at the same time, if those babies are not developing and thriving, if they're not successfully making it to adolescence and early adulthood without becoming infected, then all the work that we're doing is for naught. And one of the things that I think keeps me awake at night and does give me a lot of angst, not just because I have 2 teenage daughters myself, but when we look at really what's happening, about 7,000 adolescents are infected every single week globally with HIV, and the majority of those adolescents are in sub-Saharan Africa. So Mothers to Mothers has also been moving very quickly, very aggressively into that adolescent space. Part of that looks like pairing peer mentors, so younger adolescent and young women that we train in this space to work with a more seasoned mentor mother to provide very specific services to adolescents. Some of it is making sure that clinics and other services are adolescent friendly, so that if a young girl does come into a clinic that she needs some services, that she's not turned away because potentially she doesn't have her ID with her or she doesn't have a parent with her. Instead of turning her away, how do we navigate her into a situation in which the support she needs, the parental support that she must have, is there with her, and also building on that health-seeking behavior that she had to go in the first place, and also making sure that we're doing all the kinds of things to reinforce adolescence, because it's a very different reality and situation. We see now that with mobile apps, with telephones, with all kinds of other information and social media, young people are in situations, whether it's potentially finding sexual partners or being identified as sexual partners or transacting in different ways that put them at risk that I didn't have to deal with when I was 18 years old, and that I hadn't had to see in the last kind of 20-ish years. We're now in a situation that things move very quickly, and it's harder and harder to find those vulnerable children, because in many ways, they all are. And so Mothers to Mothers is moving very quickly into this space because we want to make sure that that infection rate is stopped in its tracks, and that we start to actually get the dividends of these HIV-free babies that are being born growing up into healthy adolescents and into vibrant adults.
Still, eradicating it in 2025 would be a huge milestone.
It would be. And I'm not saying that we would be able to eradicate all of HIV. I think that we really could eliminate pediatric AIDS, which if you think about kind of where we were in 2001, where 2,000 children were being born every single day with HIV, that is a huge accomplishment to be able to say that from 2001 to 2025, we have basically taken transmission to well below 5%. And proudly, I can say that's something that I know we can do here at Mothers to Mothers. For the fourth year in a row in 2017, we were able to have virtual elimination among the cohort of clients in our care. We had a transmission rate of 1.6%. And that's something that is pretty fantastic, especially when we think about when we started, that transmission rate was almost 40%.
And in thinking about the societal benefits, has the Mothers to Mothers model contributed to job growth in Africa?
Definitely. From the very basic, just counting of the numbers, we have employed over 10,000 HIV-positive women and employed them in ways that has really changed their lives and changed their community's lives. It changes the family that they're part of. That child now has access to more resources in the home, such as food, such as supplies for education fees. It allows that family unit to make some different decisions, and it also adds to both not just food security, but also to actual home and even potential property security. A quick anecdote from a mentor mother here in South Africa, in a place near Gauteng by Johannesburg. She was very proud. She's one of our spokeswomen, and she was very proud to show me a picture on her mobile phone. And she said, "Frank, what do you think this is?" And I said, "What is that?" I said, "Oh," I said, "are you redoing your kitchen?" Because I could see that it was a dirt plot and that there was string marking out what looked like to be an expansion of the small home. And she said, "Nope." I said, "You're building an extra room." And I said, "Are you pregnant?" She said, no, I'm not, but no. And I said, "Okay, I can't guess. What is it?" And she said, "That's the expansion that I've been able to pay for with my salary from Mothers to Mothers. I am adding on a space into my home that will be a nail and beauty salon for the evenings and weekends. I'm going to hire other HIV-positive women to train them to be able to both provide the service, but we're also going to make sure that we're providing HIV education information to all of our clients." And the smile on her face could not have been bigger. Her pride could not have been any stronger that, what to me was a very specific example of what this means. This 10,000 strong group of women that we have employed that are doing incredible things elsewhere. If they're not with Mothers to Mothers, they're in other NGOs. Many of them are picked up into the health facilities and other services. And they're really doing some things that, for them, remembering that their job as a mentor mother is often their first formal employment outside of the home. And so it is a, it's an important trajectory. In addition, we also know that that then helps those families and those structures to then help other families. So, for example, in Uganda, we are part of a village savings and loan program in which our mentor mothers and key clients are pooling resources to be able to save for rainy days, to be able to multiply the capital that they have at hand, and to make purchases, whether it's for seed grain, whether it's for seeds to plant, whether it's for materials to add onto a home. They are resources that start to get used in that community in a very different way that wouldn't have existed if not for the mentor mothers who are building these networks, who are employed and are bringing their resources into their communities.
It's wonderful to hear, Frank, and beautiful social entrepreneur stories that result. It sounds like a truly optimistic and also realistic future. So what initiatives are Mothers to Mothers planning over the next several years and beyond?
So a couple of key things. We've already talked about the early childhood development programs and adolescence. Very honestly, we need to, over the next few years, we need to figure out resources and something to work better with men. We are seeing men now in our services, especially when mentor mothers are in homes and in communities. But we need to do something more for men. Men are 50% of the equation. And we are hearing from our clients, you know, what can you help my husband, my partner, my son? How can you help make sure that they're getting the effect of this program? And what we're finding is that instead of men being, you know, the problem that they're often blamed for, that they are the problem of X, Y, and Z, that men actually do want. They want to be healthy. They want to be good partners. They want to play a big role in the life of their children and their partner, but they don't have access. There is not a similar point in time and space for men, especially here in sub-Saharan Africa, to access health services. Unlike the West, where young boys go in for school examinations, physical exams, for sports exams, that kind of space doesn't quite exist here. So Mothers to Mothers is working hard within our innovation approaches to figure out how we can best work with men. And specifically in Lesotho, the team there is working on a kind of a male champions, a male engagement activity to see how that would work. In the past, we've tried fathers to fathers, we've tried mentor fathers in Kenya and in other places, and it hasn't worked for us. And so we've gone back to the drawing board. And I think that's one of the things, you use the term entrepreneurial. Mothers to Mothers at its heart is a social entrepreneur organization. And we believe in failing fast. We believe in learning from those failures and applying them to the future. And the core of almost all of our programming that moves forward comes from some spectacular failure that we learned something from and that we applied it in a different way. And so men, that's an important piece of what we're doing. And I think the second big piece that we're looking at and paying attention to very quickly, as I mentioned, we're following the virus. And unfortunately, the HIV virus is making friends with other disease issues here on the continent, as we call kind of comorbidities. So tuberculosis tends to come hand in hand with HIV. HIV tends to weaken an individual, where then tuberculosis can be stronger, or tuberculosis weakens an individual, so HIV can come in stronger, as well as with some non-communicable diseases, specifically things like diabetes, like upper respiratory diseases and high blood pressure. So we are also tinkering in the places and spaces in which we work on the idea of equipping mentor mothers others with different skill sets. Some, for example, when they're in a home and they're helping to make sure that a client is adhering to their treatment and that they're virally suppressed, if they know that that client, whether it's through the husband or someone else in the family, has tuberculosis, they can do monitoring. They potentially could do sputum collection. In addition to the education, we could be in the homes helping with blood glucose monitoring and helping with different food choices and understanding physical activities. We could do a lot of different things to continue to improve the health of the community. And all of that is about making sure that as we are both eliminating and driving HIV to viral suppression, that we are not losing or keep, that we're not taking our eye off the prize, that someone can be virally suppressed now, something could happen like tuberculosis, and down the line, HIV comes back really, really strongly. So we are continuing to say that while we're going to eliminate pediatric AIDS, we have not been able to eliminate HIV/AIDS in general. And so we will continue to work with our clients to make sure that they're as healthy and have the best possible outcomes that they can.
Knowledge, expanding skill sets, access, saving children, reaching men, learning from failures. Well, in these life-saving areas, listeners can find out more online at m2m.org and on social media. Frank, we wish you and your team much continued success in eradicating AIDS and empowering women.
Thank you so very much. I really, really appreciate it, Robert. And thank you to your listeners. And I really hope folks do look at m2m.org to find out more about us.
Thank you for joining us today. Our library of interviews and a range of further resources are available at our website, innovatepodcast.org. Innovate is produced in partnership with Ashoka, Innovators for the Public, the Kellogg Fellows Leadership Alliance, the Philadelphia Social Innovations Journal, and by Arch Street Press. For PRX, the Public Radio Exchange, this has been Innovate.